Happy anniversary!
Happy anniversary! Ding, 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 ding.
You know, excited.
I'm excited.
This is our 8th year with The Beacon, and we're going to get underway right now. Believe it.
Was it March 8th of 2009?
Yes.
We debuted.
Yes.
Holy smokes.
I don't know if people have heard the story, but we've told it a few times on the show about the fact that we started out as a 10-week venture that ended up 8 years later. Here we are.
8 years and still kicking.
And still kicking.
Boy.
We've got a lot of energy left in us yet,
we
too.
We do.
You know, you created a new segment.
Let us turn
up the beat.
We've certainly evolved over the years.
We have.
It's crazy.
We have. It's not crazy.
It feels crazy to me. It feels like 8 years have gone by. 8 years have gone by.
Your life's 8 years shorter.
It is. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Listen, anytime.
I appreciate it.
And you turned a big number there, too. Zero number.
Big 4-0 last year. Yep. I'm now 41, and yes.
Wow.
I know.
Jeez, you're getting...
I'm getting old.
Over the hill.
I know, it is.
You know, so what can I say?
But I take care of myself. I'm young at heart. That's what I keep telling myself.
She smells real good today,
Thank
too.
You. You
know, she smells excellent.
And I get a little Botox.
Yeah.
I know.
You don't.
I do. I do. I can't believe I just said that on the radio. I'm not ashamed. I get into my crow's feet because I have really, really, I mean, even for my age, my crow's feet are like, when I went in to see the doctor for the first time, she, you know, they have you smile so they can see where they need to put it. And she's like, yeah, you have such a pretty face, but boy, those crow's feet are terrible. Holy, they add 12 years to your life. Yeah.
But you had crow's feet when you were 10.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know what? All it means is that I've spent a lot of time smiling in my life. So I can't complain about that. But I can do something about it. So I get those babies smoothed out every 4 months or so. Not ashamed. Not ashamed.
I have a friend in Texas who does that too.
Yeah.
She's I won't say her name.
No, we'll keep it anonymous.
She did Botox and she looks 10 years younger and she's in her 60s.
Yeah. It's something. So, and yeah. I've only done the crow's feet. I don't feel like I really need it anywhere else. I feel like the rest of my face is pretty smooth for now. But I'm not, you know, I'm open to the idea of something in the future. I just don't, I'm just not there yet. We'll get there.
Eventually.
Eventually.
You know, eventually we'll get there. Hey, speaking of getting there, Sheila Perkins is here.
She's going to help you get there.
She's going to help us get there. And she is going to be talking about Job Club today.
Yeah, cool.
So, and then a couple of other things that she's got on the agenda.
Great.
So that should be a lot of fun. We have a surprise segment coming up.
Surprise.
And then we have you.
Moi. Let us turn up the beat.
We have turn up the beat. And then Tom's Corner.
Love it.
So we'll get underway. I'm Bill Jurek.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
Happy anniversary.
Happy
again.
Anniversary to you, darling.
We'll be right back.
This is the story of Daniel, who was born 2 months early. His lungs weren't ready. His heart wasn't ready. His parents could only hope that one day he would leave the hospital healthy, and they would all live happily ever after. Daniel's is just one of the more than 500,000 stories of babies born prematurely last year. You can help the March of Dimes stop premature birth and bring more babies home healthy. Learn how at marchofdimes.com. Working together for stronger, healthier babies.
Sheila Perkins is with us.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
I am a lot better now. Thank you very much.
That's good to hear.
Thank God winter's coming to an end pretty soon, too. Oh, Lord.
And what a winter it's been.
Not too bad.
Yeah, no. You can't complain.
No, I can't complain.
Yes.
But we're talking Job Club.
Yes, we are.
We're finishing up the alphabet for the do's and don'ts.
Of customer service.
Customer service.
That's exactly right.
Right, so... We probably should get at it right away.
I think so.
What do you want to do, the alphabet first?
Well, you know what? Let's do job club first.
Okay.
And leave the alphabet good. For the last.
Okay. And if we have time, we'll do the alphabet.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if I told you this or not, but we, every year we revise our job club agenda.
Okay.
So we change it. And we change it because we want to make sure that we have quite an impact on the participants. And we want to make sure that they learn what they need to learn,
sure.
that they retain what they've learned, and that they use what they've learned.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully.
So this year, we have decided to sort of mix and concentrate our classes. Now, let me tell you what that means.
Yeah, I'd like to.
Mixing them means we're going to do a couple weeks of self-improvement, self-motivation, self-inspiring types of sessions.
Sure.
And then a few weeks of lecture.
Okay.
People coming in to lecture about different topics.
Ah.
Then we go back to the self-improving, self-inspiring sessions, and then go back to the lectures.
Okay.
And we felt that if we did it that way, people would be able to relate better to what they hear.
When the people come in.
When the people come in to speak. Yeah. Exactly. So, like week one, our job club will be starting March 2nd. It's a Thursday.
Okay, good. After winter.
From 10 to 12. We don't know where it'll be yet, but we will know by March 2nd. So, anybody coming in the door to Lighthouse, just ask for job club at the front desk.
Well, you could have it at Hugo's Frog Bar.
What we were thinking about
or
that.
Or Gibson's.
It would just be
house.
Too much fun, Bill.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, we got to keep it, you know, on the straight and narrow.
Okay.
All right. And then we can go to Hugo's.
Yeah, afterwards.
That's right. So week one is knowing yourself, the development of individual employment goals, and narrowing the job search focus. And what we want to do...
That always happens, too, by the way.
What we want to do is make sure that everyone understands what their goals are, that they have goals,
sure.
that they've developed goals, that they thought about it, and not just wanting to go in and say, I need a job.
Right.
So that's what that does. And then the second week, once you get to know your goals and you've developed your goals, the second week is marketing yourself.
Oh,
so now I know what I want to do. Now I have to learn how to do it. I have to market my skills and my professional qualities.
Sure.
I have to present myself to others, in a professional manager. I have to be able to pitch my skills. And one of the tests that we use on this particular session, Bill, is that we do elevator speeches.
Oh, the quickies.
The quickies.
Yeah.
Because you never know when you're going to be in a situation where you're going to be on an elevator and somebody's going to say, you know, I'm looking for 20 workers. I'm looking for 18 workers.
Sure,
I need some.
Sure.
And you need to be able to jump in. So we do these little elevator speeches so that if you ever get in that predicament, you can handle yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of marketing yourself. Also, you know, doing it in a confident manner. How to carry yourself, how to remain comfortable while doing this. So we do all of that in week two. And then after you've gotten all of that in your head, then we go to week three, which is the impact of working while receiving Social Security benefits.
Now, that's always a challenge.
And that's a full house because everybody, you know, the Social Security will come after you if you do not report your earnings. People need to know when they need to report their earnings. They need to know how much they need to report. They need to know how it's going to affect their income.
Sure.
So we give them, and we have someone come in from Social Security to talk about that.
Okay.
All right. Then week four is financial literacy. So now that you know what to do and when you have to pay Social Security back, you got to know what to do with the rest of your money. Paying bills on time, you know, it's those surprise bills that you didn't budget for.
Right.
Looking for subsidies and financial resources and scholarships and tools to assist you with bill payment.
Sure.
So we do that in week four. Week five, we go back to the nitty-gritty improving yourself, and we do resumes, electronic profiles, and cover letters.
Oh, okay. Well, that's week five.
And that's week five. Now, you know, and you would think that we wouldn't have to do resumes, but we do, Bill. We have to make sure that these resumes, and a lot of them are in great order. People understand them.
Sure,
but
sure.
There are some that don't. So we want to make sure that everybody gets a standard. We have a standard form of a resume that we use. It's a business standard form.
Mm-hmm.
And people know, can feel comfortable talking from their resume when they're in the interview. And that's what we want.
Right.
But the other two things that we really address in this session is the social media concept. You know, you and I have talked about this before, and how you're how you present yourself on Facebook or LinkedIn or any of these other sites, and how that's viewed by employers.
Mm-hmm.
We also talk about, and this is a big one, Bill, choosing the right references. You cannot put Uncle Joe down because you changed his flat tire.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't do that.
No.
And don't put down references that of people that you have not called. Because what they will do is when people call them to get a reference for you, they will say, who?
Yeah, and what are you talking about?
And that you do not want.
No, no.
So we have to go, we had to add that to our resume piece to make sure people understand that you have got to choose the right references. And when you do, go to them and ask them, will they give you a good reference? This happened to me. I had a reference list of about four people at one time. And I went, I called one of the people on the list and said, will you give me a good reference? And she said, yes. And I said, oh, great. And you know what she did? She gave me a bad one.
Whoa.
And I said, I asked you, if you were going to give me a reference. She said, well, I did.
Oh.
I didn't say a good reference. Make sure you stress. Will you give me
good
a
reference.
Good reference?
Yeah.
She gave me, and she listed all of my weaknesses up front as she saw them, and things that she had problems with when I was working with her, things that didn't show up on my evaluation.
Sure.
So people think they're doing you a justice, and they're not. You're thinking that they're doing something else for you. You have to straighten that out from the beginning.
Yeah.
And be careful about that. Then April 6th, we go into everybody's favorite part that they don't want to do. And this is week six, interviewing.
Yep.
Mock interviewing. We have to do mock interviewing so that people understand they have to turn off their cell phones.
Right.
People understand that they can't chew gum. People understand that you can't sit there with your arms on top of your head answering a question. Right. You have to sit in a business
form. They don't do that, do they?
Yes, we've had people do that.
Oh, Lord.
So people have to understand how everything they do is judged and looked at and evaluated by the employer. And what you want when you go into an interview is for the employer to concentrate on what you're saying.
And not your
body
activity,
Exactly, exactly. So we do interviewing, and we have HR, our human resource staff, come in and talk to people about things that they've seen in interviews so they understand the concept. Then on week seven, we actually do the mock interviewing and the role playing, and we couple that too with the computer assessment process.
Oh, okay.
Because we have to know the skills that people have in computer skills that they have, so that we know if we have to work with them to improve their skills, you know, if they have to work on their skills at home, that kind of thing. So we assess all of that in week seven. So then in week eight, we move on to federal and state employment opportunities.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And we have people come in and talk about things that they have to do to get into hired with the feds and the state. And then on week nine, we do transportation and orientation and mobility.
Oh, okay.
And that's a biggie. Learning how to navigate, how to travel independently, how to navigate, how to build your self-confidence while doing that, how to get around, whether you have a guide dog or not, how to get what to do when you go into a building and you don't know which way you go, you get turned around. So we want people to feel comfortable with that.
Sure.
That's week nine. Week 10 is Americans with Disabilities Act. We go through that, how ADA affects your job seeking disclosure, when to disclose what your visual impairment is if you decide to disclose, what type of reasonable accommodation you will need, and then we also have people share past experiences regarding their disability exposure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So we do that. And then week 11, we have Tom Persky, the famous Tom Persky.
Oh, no.
The infamous Tom Persky come in and talk about accessible work sites and adaptive technology.
Right, right.
And that's always a winner, too. I mean, and he does that down in the store in the Lighthouse, you know, right on the first floor.
Yeah.
And it's packed every time we do it.
Really?
Because everybody wants to know about technology. They don't want to know how much it costs, but they do want to know.
Of course not, yeah.
But they do want to know about it. And sometimes it's not, it's reasonable. I mean,
right,
you know,
right.
The things, it depends on what their need is.
Sure.
But Tom and his staff do a wonderful session.
They're great
It's
people.
A great session.
They really are.
And our participants enjoy it. And then week 12 is our summation session. And that's where people get to give comments and questions and concerns that they have about the whole process and fill out our customer satisfaction surveys. We do them as we go each week, but we do a general one
at the end,
exactly, so that people can have an opportunity to give feedback and to discuss what they would like to see changed, if anything, or what they would like to see discontinued, if anything. And what they'd like to see continued.
Wow, you cover the whole base.
We sure do. We try.
And it's 12 weeks that this takes place.
March 2nd through May 18th. And it's facilitated by Maureen Reed, who is the job placement counselor in the Employment Services Department at the Chicago Lighthouse.
Right. Terrific. Mm-hmm. We're talking to Sheila Perkins, who is the vice president of... job placement.
Employment services.
Employment services at the Chicago Lighthouse. And stay and see, we still have time.
We still have time.
For the alphabet.
Okay. Now, I think the last time we spoke, we went through A through M. And these are the A through Z's of customer service excellence.
Okay.
So, starting with N, N is for nurturing the culture of customer service excellence within your organization. O is for ownership throughout the entire organization. All employees should own and feel.
Mm-hmm.
P is for processes. Having effective processes in place to facilitate excellent customer service delivery. Q is for quality service provision. R is for recovery. When something goes wrong, then take immediate action to keep control of the situation and find a solution which is acceptable to all. S is for satisfaction. Test the effectiveness of customer service strategies by measuring customer satisfaction. T is for trust. Keep your organization's promise.
Mm-hmm.
U is for understanding the contributing factors to customer service excellence.
Mm-hmm.
V is for visibility. Customer service standards and details of current performance in achieving those standards should be made available to all employees and customers.
Sure.
W is for word of mouth, and we know this will kill you, this will hurt you and make you. Impress your customers, and it will work to your advantage.
Yeah, I can imagine it would, yeah.
Upset your customers, and it will damage your reputation, and it only takes one unhappy customer.
And that's it.
And that's it. X is for exceptional service. Surprise your customers with the level of service you offer them. Y is for year in, year out, because your customer service strategy should be constantly revisited to ensure that standards and processes remain relevant and current.
Mm-hmm.
And Z is for zealous in your pursuit of customer service excellence.
That about covers them all.
That does it all.
Is that list available somewhere?
You know, this was a list that one of my workers found on our website, and we pulled it off and used it. And then what we did was tweaked it because we added some more to it based on the customer service culture that has been invented at the Lighthouse. So right now I'm going to say, no, we don't have it out for publication.
Okay.
But certainly if anybody would like, you know, to know more about it, they can give me a call. That's no problem.
Do you have to register for the job sessions?
No, you don't. You can just come. They're from 10 to 12 on Thursdays starting March 2nd.
Now, is there a charge for it?
No, free.
Wow. See,
yes.
So you
we're
going to
give you all this information for free.
You can't go wrong.
No, you can't.
So that sounds good, and it starts March 2nd.
March 2nd.
And it goes through it gets us into the warm weather.
Yes, it does.
Absolutely.
Yes, it does.
Well, listen, thank you for joining us.
You are so welcome. It's great to see you.
It's great to be seen. And no, it's It's good to see you,
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
And then we'll meet back here. We'll circle the wagons again next month.
Sounds good. I'll have something interesting to talk to you about then.
Sounds good. That's Sheila Perkins with the department over here that I think if you're looking for work, you need to talk to them. She is the Vice President of
Employment Services.
Employment Services at the Chicago Lighthouse.
Thank you, Bill.
1.4 million people in Illinois really want to work but can't. If they get jobs, they could lose their Medicaid health coverage, and private insurance is difficult to obtain. This is the reality for people with disabilities. The Health Benefits for Workers with Disabilities program can help. HBWD is a state program that provides health insurance for working individuals with disabilities. Call 800-226-0768 or visit hbwdillinois.com. Don't let your disability keep you from working.
I like Sheila.
Yes.
You know, she's retiring.
I didn't know
she's
that.
She's retiring, yeah.
We're going to lose all the good ones. Hey,
well, that's, you know.
Yeah, that's the way of the world, right?
You eventually get tired and you say, I've had enough and I'm going.
Well, you know, and again, in this political climate,
No, go ahead.
You know, us social services types of agencies, we kind of need to fend for ourselves these days. So
I banged you with my microphone.
Yes, I saw. You didn't bang me. You banged yourself.
Yeah, well, but can you imagine what it sounds like?
Yeah.
I got to show you something.
Well, something on the air?
No. Well, it's something that...
you want to do this right now?
Yeah. Nate, clean up your act.
I'm not even talking about that.
Jeez.
You are a dirty old... I'm going to turn this around on you. Dirty old man.
Okay, hang on. I got it.
Okay.
Dominic Calabrese.
Yes.
Is our Director of Public Relations.
Correct.
And he goes on vacation every summertime.
Okay.
You got to smell this.
It's February.
He brings back March. January. He brings back jelly every year. Smell it.
All right. Wow. Cherry bourbon jelly.
Yeah. How about
Holy
that?
Holy smokes. It smells like cherry bourbon jelly.
You know, and
have you tasted it yet?
No, I'm going to taste it tomorrow morning.
Wow.
Actually, I'm leaving it here.
Okay.
And when I bring toast here.
That's nice of Dom.
Yeah. Isn't that
very
nice?
Very nice. Yeah. Is it from Kentucky?
It's
Is that
from
where he goes?
Okay. Yeah.
That's Kentucky bourbon. That's the bourbon capital of
the world. Of the world, yeah.
I'm assuming. I don't know for sure. I don't know much about my bourbons, but Kentucky bourbon I've at least heard of, so it's something.
So it's got to be something.
It's
got to
be something on the grid.
It's a little Jack Daniels on the side there.
Yeah, exactly.
So you've got, now that we talked about that.
Yes. Nice segue into
your segment.
Lettuce turn up the beat.
Lettuce turn up
the beat.
A little
whiskey, a little health eating.
Sure. What the heck?
Yeah,
why
go with
not?
It. Yeah. Love it.
The stage, my dear, is yours.
Thank you, love. Well, we started last week with our life hacks for healthy eating, and we're just going to go ahead and continue that segment this week as well.
And I won't interrupt you too much.
You
go
just
ahead.
Did, but thank you very much. Thanks for interrupting me to tell me you're not going to interrupt me. I do appreciate it. All right. So
well, you know, I really didn't mean to interrupt you, so.
Just keep going. I'll wait.
Okay. Go ahead.
So dress your food yourself. So that means order salad dressing, aioli, and sauces
Tuxedo?
On.
Tuxedo?
What?
Well, you said dress it yourself, so.
You funny. Ha ha.
Go ahead.
All right. For those of you
who don't. I'm interested in what you're saying
here. Okay. Thank you. Yes. So for those of you, if dressing your food yourself isn't clear, it basically means getting your salad without dressing, requesting the dressing on the side, and then you can, you know, use however much you want on your salad so that you have control over the portion sizes.
Right, right.
Oftentimes, if you order salad in restaurants, it's well-intended, but then they douse it in dressing, and
I know,
but that...
Creamy garlic.
Yeah, but honey, that adds, you know, hundreds of calories. Like, literally, salad dressing can add hundreds of calories to your salad.
Yeah.
So, this will just allow you to have a little bit more control over how much you eat. You know, if you like it and you want to douse, that's fine, you know, but at least you have control over it instead of letting the kitchen at a restaurant decide how much you're eating.
Right.
All right. Next, pour off the oil that collects at the top of peanut butter jars and like salad dressing bottles, which I actually do a lot. Because natural peanut butter, when you're buying peanut butter, butter that's literally just smashed peanuts, right. There's a natural oil that collects at the top. And I'm not talking about like the Skippy or the Jif that's right, you know, right. been processed, that's processed to death. Yeah. So this is just natural peanut butter. When you open up the top, there's usually a good, I don't know, half an inch of oil that's kind of sitting at the top. Dump that out. You don't need it. And that will save, let's see, it says you'll skim off about 119 calories of fat.
Whoa.
119 calories and 14 grams of fat for each tablespoon of oil you discard. So if you're tossing out, you know, 4 or 5 tablespoons of oil, that's a good 700 calories and you know, 100 grams right. of fat that you're getting out of that jar of peanut butter. So I've actually followed that tip for years. You know, it's always sure. worked well. And then a pro tip is leave a little bit of oil in nut butters to make the spreading easier. Because if you dump out all the oil, then it just will kind of dry out it'll just yeah. make it difficult to spread. Yeah. So leave a little bit in there. And it's healthy fats too, which your body needs to function. So it's okay to ingest a little bit of it, but you can certainly modify it. Order vinaigrettes instead of creamy salad dressings. That saves you calories and fat as well. Creamy salad dressings tend to, you know, really pack on the calories. So if you use a vinaigrette instead that has a lot less stuff in it, therefore less calories.
I've been making a Greek salad where I have tomatoes.
Yeah. Ooh, so good.
I have feta cheese. Mm. I have
cucumbers.
Yes,
you must.
I have olives.
Yeah.
And what I do is I use salad dressing, regular salad dressing, on that mixture. And it has to be a vinaigrette.
Yes, it has to be.
It just kind of adds to the flavor of it.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. I know. I like vinaigrettes. I mean, yeah. I do like creamy salad dressings, but it's just when you're going for lighter, the creamy salad dressings are very heavy. You know,
sure.
you feel
that.
You don't feel like you're eating healthy when you eat a salad with a creamy salad dressing on it.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. And this is another one that I use. Use unsweetened almond milk in your coffee. I actually will do half coffee and half almond milk because I like my coffee very light.
Sure.
So I use actually an unsweetened vanilla almond milk, which kind of adds just a little bit of taste to it.
Yeah.
So a splash of skim milk or 1% milk is fine for your diet. It's not going to derail you or anything. But creamers and whole milk, that really adds up. So if you're using 3 tablespoons of cream or whole milk in your coffee, you're adding, you know, a good 200 calories to your coffee and plus a lot of sugar. And, you know, so if you use unsweetened almond milk, there's about 30 calories in a cup of unsweetened almond milk. So very, very negligible. And then I'd usually do a teaspoon of like organic cane sugar too, and that's 15 calories. So that's 30 calories plus the 30 from my almond milk. So that's about 60 calories that I'm adding to my coffee. But if you're comparing that to a creamer or a whole milk, you know, it's a good 200 calories less than what you would be using if you used creamer.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that you know, you can easily drink your calories. You know, they think they have coffee in the morning and, you know, get a bunch of creamer and sugar in it, but they don't count that toward their calories for the day, when in reality, that's, you know, that actually is a huge proponent for weight gain is what you put in your coffee.
You
got to
be like my son, though. He goes to Dunkin' Donuts and buys that extra large coffee with cream.
Yep.
And you're sitting down. So
Yes.
With 8 sugars.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh.
I said, do you have a little coffee with your sugar?
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Right. And your son is still young enough to have the metabolism to keep up.
Oh, God,
one day
yeah.
he won't. One day he will
one
not.
One day he'll blow out like a tire, you know, and that'll be it.
And that's the thing is, like, so you can get away with eating this way for a good 30 years of your life, and then suddenly you're in your 30s, and it's just not metabolizing the way it once did. Mm-hmm. And that's really when you need to start being mindful of what you're putting in your body.
Right. We'll let you do one more.
One more. All right. Eat powdered peanut butter instead of the real stuff. I have mixed feelings about this. No. Listen. I use powdered peanut butter only in, like, smoothies and things like that, where you still get the taste of the peanut butter, but you don't need the texture. I'm not putting powdered peanut butter on my toast. Am I putting powdered peanut butter on my toast. But I love baking with it. You can put it in smoothies. You can put it in sauces. Anything that requires like a peanut butter taste, like Thai
cookies.
Noodles or something. Yeah, cookies, exactly. Yeah. Things like that where you don't need the texture of the peanut butter. If you're doing toast or something and you want peanut butter on your toast, have peanut butter on your toast. Don't do the powdered stuff. But when the texture is not important and you're just looking for a peanut buttery taste, the powdered peanut butter is fantastic. And it's like 45 calories and 2 2 tablespoons,
it's
I think.
It's got to be, yeah.
A 2 tablespoon serving is 45 calories as opposed to 200 calories in 2 tablespoons of peanut butter.
I must really go over because I put like about 8...
Yes.
Of peanut butter on the bread and
yes.
an equal amount of jelly, too.
Yes. Peanut butter and jelly is delicious, but it's something you need to be mindful of because while peanut butter is a healthy fat, you can still overindulge very easily. It's 200 calories and 2 tablespoons of peanut butter, and I don't even know how much fat, but a lot of fat.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So, you know, when you do use peanut butter, it's good to, you know, I like to measure out my peanut butter because it's very easy to overdo peanut butter. So, that is my lettuce turn up the beat life hacks of the day.
And we will have more coming up for you
next week.
I feel like it's all on my shoulders. How am I going to take care of my parents if they develop an eye disease like glaucoma? Glaucoma is the leading cause of blindness in African Americans and Hispanics in the United States. And what about my kids? Will they inherit it? Not to mention my risk factor. I'm really concerned and I need some answers.
Call 1-800-437-2423 or go to ahaf.org for answers, including a free brochure on glaucoma.
Chicago is known around the world as the birthplace of a skyscraper and other magnificent buildings. What's not talked about as much, but just as notable, are the memorials, the monuments, the fountains, and architectural landmarks that adorn the city of Chicago. Larry Broutman, researcher, engineer, photographer, world traveler, Hall of Famer, I'm going to ask you about that, and a board member of the Chicago Lighthouse is here to tell us about Chicago Monumental. It's his new book, and it shines a light on Chicago's monuments. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Now, I'm a person, like many people, who walk around the city of Chicago, and we see all these magnificent sculptures, but we don't know the stories behind them. So this book is something that I've had a lot of fun looking at over the last few days. And what made you decide to put it together?
Well, I think your comment is very appropriate, because a lot of people that live in the city and a lot of people that come to visit the city will see the monuments, because they're all over the city, particularly in the downtown, you know, near north area, along the parks and so on. But very few people really stop to look at them. And I decided that, therefore, it would be beneficial to research the monuments out, and I had been doing that for a number of years, and tell their story. And in that way, also, some of the stories of Chicago can also be told. The history, for example, because these monuments go back to the 1860s, actually. Mm-hmm. So it was a combination of things, and I also felt as I was going along with the book that these monuments and the parks that many of them are located in really dramatize and glorify the city, so that the beauty of the city. And Chicago is an incredibly beautiful city, probably one of the most beautiful in the country, really stand out. And I felt the book would be a good tribute for that purpose, to really dramatize the beauty of Chicago.
And approximately how many monuments and fountains and all of those things would you say are in the city?
Approximately, there's over 200. These, and when I say 200 monuments, the book really emphasizes historic monuments. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do a general book on public art. Now, these monuments are considered public art. But to cover all the public art in the city, for example, the Picasso statue downtown, etc., I didn't want to do that. I wanted to make this more special, and hence I decided that I was really going to concentrate on typically pre-1920s monuments, and there are plenty of them in the city.
And what are some of your favorite monuments in the city that you saw?
Well, tough question. I love so many of them. I think probably the one in my mind that stands out the most is one in Jackson Park, and that is called the Republic. It's probably, in my mind, I would have to say it's my favorite because of its pure beauty. Again, I don't know how many people have seen it, but it's approximately 25 feet high in gilded gold. covering over bronze. It's just an absolutely beautiful statue with an incredible history. So that's probably my favorite statue or monument. But there are others, like the Balboa Monument, mm-hmm. All of the Lincoln monuments, which are amazing monuments, seven of them throughout the city. It's really hard to distinguish them beyond on that because they're all so good.
And what do you think Chicago, why do you think Chicago sort of gravitates towards creating these monuments? What do we as citizens get from it?
I think this goes back again to the early, relatively early days of Chicago. When I say that, I mean really the 1850s and beyond. Chicago was basically became a city in 1833. But I think that the most prominent fact is really the fact that the Columbian Exposition, the World's Fair of 1893, was held here. And even though monuments were being created in the city prior to that, the greatest number really occurred as a result of the Columbian Exposition. And the Columbian Exposition, which are also called noted for being the White City, white because the buildings were all white. That brought incredible number of sculptors to the city in order to prepare the sculptures for the exposition. And the sculptures were basically artistic in nature. Some of them were memorials, but many of them were just artistic expressions of the sculptors. This kind of led, to answer your question more specifically, to the development, because of the sculptors that then resided in Chicago and became associated with the Art Institute of Chicago, developed into a more, let's say, commemorative statues. And that probably began with Abraham Lincoln. Mm-hmm. And so once the Abraham Lincoln monuments, some of them, the one in Lincoln Park and the one in Grant Park, were sculpted and placed, I think this promoted the concept of commemorative statues. And so many famous Chicagoans, famous Americans, have been basically memorialized by incredible sculptors.
And many of these individuals don't have necessarily ties to Chicago, but because of their greatness and what they've achieved in their life, a group of individuals, maybe from an ethnic group, decided to commission a work for that individual and have it placed here.
Absolutely. There were several benefactors that were, again, prominent in Chicago in the 1800s. They commissioned and had the foresight to provide funds for the development of public art and monuments, as well as, when I say monuments, I'm including fountains, because mm-hmm. we have such incredible fountains in the city. So I think that was an important step, that having the benefactors available to support that kind of public art, that was, again, a major factor.
I mean, it's such, as you mentioned before, such rich history. Names like Alan Pinkerton I've heard of before, but I wasn't aware that there was a statue or a memorial to him here in Chicago. So right. you find that out, and then you read about that individual. Stephen A. Douglas, Ulysses Grant, all of these individuals. And when I was in school, my teacher, I used to have a joke that she would throw out to us, and she would ask us what color was Ulysses Grant's old gray mare. And we'd sit there and think, all we had to do is go to the statue.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of the commemorative statues of that kind, many of them are Civil War related, like, as you're pointing out, Ulysses Grant, and of course in the same era, Stephen Douglas. And I don't know more than I don't even know if it's a handful of people that I have come across that even know that there's a Stephen Douglas Memorial Park on the south side of Chicago, and that there's this... Right, and that there's this incredible, that's where he is buried. His tomb is there with about a hundred foot high monument, which he is on top of, at least the sculpture of him. So we have all these wonderful tributes and monuments, as you've just pointed out. And again, I think they're underviewed. That was another reason to do the book.
And there's only, unfortunately, one woman who has a sculpture in the city. We have to work on that.
Right. There aren't. That's a really good point. And you know, I really sought for, as I was closing out the book, to do my best to ensure that I had covered all of the monuments and statues in the city. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure that that's accurate. In my next book, by the way, which is based on solely cemetery monuments, I was able to include Jane Byrne, because Jane Byrne, the first woman mayor of the city of Chicago, while she doesn't have a monument, at least she has, I photographed her gravestone or headstone in the cemetery. But that's a little bit different, but nevertheless, you're right that there aren't many tributes to women. I think that Jane Hull was Jane Addams is included in the book.
Yes. But it's just not a work of love. There's a special benefit goes along with the book, because you're donating the proceeds to charity, specifically the Lighthouse.
Yes, I am on the board of the Lighthouse, and all of this is the second book that I have published. All of the author's proceeds, which are my, you know, royalties and proceeds, are being donated to the Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind, and also to another organization that benefits people with disabilities, and that's Access Living. So the more books we sell, the more money that these organizations will get through the sale of the books, and I'm really happy about that.
And where can we get the book?
The books are easily available. For example, both my first book and this book are available on Amazon.com. They're also available in virtually every bookstore in the city of Chicago, and in some cases even gift shops. So the book is quite readily available. And these days, I suppose people like to buy them off of Amazon. It's easy. But any local bookstore in the city, and there aren't that many of them left, but we'll have them.
And for folks with sight, there is a special section, a 3D section, and I just got through looking at it, and it was very, very, very wonderful part of the book where the monuments jump out at you. So that's very nice. So folks want to look out for that. Now, are you planning to do a second edition, or...?
It's not exactly a second edition, but I suppose it can be viewed that way, because the book that is now in the hands of my designer, and by the way, I want to mention that, you know, the book, I did, of course, all the photography and the text, but if it weren't for my designer, she just turned this book into a beautiful book. She's a world-class designer. And so the next book, which she's also in the process right now of designing, which is called Chicago Eternal, as I mentioned a little earlier, is really concentrating on monuments at cemeteries.
Right.
And in fact, you mentioned some of them already. Places like Graceland Cemetery and Rose Hill Cemetery. Graceland Cemetery is where Alan Pinkerton is buried, along with all of his family and most of the agents that lived in the 1860s and 70s. You know, they're just, oh gosh, incredible places with respect to the beauty of the monuments at these cemeteries. And the it really, walking through that, for example, Graceland Cemetery is like walking through also the history of the city in terms of the people that built the city in the 1800s and early 1900s. So it's going to be a really interesting book as well.
So I would imagine that some of the monuments and other things are, you can easily see because they're available on the fairways of Chicago. But if it's in a cemetery, you might have a trouble trying to get in to see it. So you would need to pick up this book in order to,
right.
to look at it and learn a little bit about it. And it's something that spurs the imagination. Now, I mentioned before Hall of Famer and plastics.
Yes.
And I did not know there was a Plastics Hall of Fame. What did you do to...
probably not too many people do unless you're in the plastics industry. But all of my engineering education was at MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I believe I was the first person to graduate, and that was in 1963 with my doctorate degree in the field of plastics engineering. That was the first degree they had ever given in that field. So my professional engineering field is in plastics and in the development of the material, in the properties of the material. And so I've been involved in the industry since 1963, basically. I did a lot of research. I was on the faculty of IIT in Chicago, mm-hmm. and taught the plastics courses and led a team of researchers. So I was fortunate enough to have really good people from all over the world working for me as graduate assistants and so on. We published a lot of technical papers and books, and I was honored 4 or 5 years ago. There is a Plastics Hall of Fame. There's about, I think, roughly maybe 50 living members in it in the world, and I'm blessed and honored to be one of those.
Well, I'm in rare company today. Thank you very much, Larry Broutman, for coming in and talking about Chicago Monumental. It's a book that you can get on Amazon.com and also other stores.
Yes.
And so pick that up. And then, of course, part of the proceeds go to the Chicago Lighthouse and other charities. So it's a good deal, and you won't be sorry. It's an excellent book, something you can keep around and refer to, and you'll be able to fill in a lot of blanks about Chicago that you probably have been wondering about but didn't really have the information or the inclination to go and actually do the research like me. It's all done by Larry.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much. Brian Hawkins.
We have to go to Tom and Brian.
Yes.
Find out what's going on technically.
Okay.
And we will visit with the boys.
Love it.
Everyone, it's Tom's Corner, and Brian Hawkins here, along with the man himself. And we've got a fresh new show with lots of things to talk about, starting with something called Iris Vision. And good morning, or afternoon, evening, Tom.
It's Brian, one of them. It's one of them. And how you been?
I've been fine.
Good,
how about
good.
Yourself?
I've been doing really good, yeah.
And enjoying the weather? And,
yeah.
Well,
it's been
good.
Really good.
I think we've been lucky so
yes,
far.
Yes. Definitely.
Now, give us the lowdown on this Iris Vision. Exactly.
So,
what is that?
We are flooded with some kinds of technology that we just never seen come this quick and this fast. And many of these devices are, we call them headborne, means, you know, it's not a machine that you sit at like a CCTV.
Mm-hmm.
These you can wear right on your head or over your eyes. So we've talked about the eSight in the past. We talked about new eyes, which looks like a bulky pair of sunglasses. So Iris Vision is a new product that's just about to launch. They've had some testing like at Johns Hopkins and some other prestigious eye centers. But we will be the next in line to be testing it and showing it. And maybe some of you who keep up with technology have seen the Samsung product that uses a smartphone, a Samsung phone, as the screen, mm-hmm. and then it has a device that I kind of say it looks like an old scuba mask where you would put it on your face, you know, you're over your eyes, and you could watch movies inside of there and all kinds of neat things like that through the use of the smartphone.
Right.
So that technology exists, and they've done pretty well with it. So these group of doctors and group of technologists came up with the idea, well, why can't we use the same hardware, but let's develop some software that would be only good for, you know, people that, with low vision types of needs. And so one of the things they came up with was the ability to reach over on the side of the mask and create what they call a bubble on the screen. Mm-hmm. So imagine, let's say your right eye is your better seeing eye, let's say. So if you want to read something, you would make the bubble whatever size you'd like, maybe the size of a dime, maybe the size of a quarter, and you can control how big that bubble is. Then the second knob inside that bubble, you can make it two times, three times, four times the normal size, all the way up to, like, I believe it's 10x, okay? And then imagine moving that bubble around the screen. So let's say, well, I don't want it directly in front of my right eye because then I can't see anything next to me. So I'm going to move it up and to the right a little bit. And then you'd be able to see around the bubble to reach over and grab your iced tea or whatever you'd like to be able to do. Or they had a picture of it where somebody was standing at a salad bar. And so you're able to see all the items in the salad bar, you know, when you look down. But, you know, with people with low vision, it's hard to identify each item and what they are. Mm-hmm. So you see something orange, you don't know if it's carrots or Colby cheese, right? So then you would move your bubble and you'd zoom in on the orange item, but you could still see every other item in the rest of the iPhone. Not the iPhone, it's a Samsung phone. Right, Android phone. And so now if you get a phone call, I have no idea how you answer.
Voice command, probably.
Yeah, well, that's probably going to come. Right, exactly. Imagine making that bubble also a shape of a square, maybe, mm-hmm. instead of a circle. Maybe you like to read print that's white on black, so you can adjust the reverse contrast on the inside of the bubble. So it's kind of limitless as to what you can do with that device. And so we know that it's going to sell for $2,500, which, of course, is a lot of money. However, some of the other headset devices are much more than that, you know, more than double that. New Eyes is closer to $6,000.
Wow.
And so forth. So, yeah, eSight is quite a bit more than that also. So that might be a way, you know, we've talked about competition in the past, and using new technologies, hopefully the price is going to come down. It's lighter weight, it's more mobile. So we're seeing this whole trend of not being stuck at your computer or not being stuck at your CCTV to do things. Now, the advantage of this is not only for reading, which I've been giving examples or seeing things up close at the salad bar, but imagine going to a concert or a play and then creating a bubble and then want to see the actors' faces, or you want to see the soloist playing the saxophone or whatever it might be. You create that bubble, and then you zoom in across the stage and be able to see somebody from far away. So it's kind of limitless in that regard. Probably the only disadvantage I see is that once it's on your head and close to your face, it's probably not going to be good to walk around freely with it. You're going to have to be more maybe seated or some way. Now, I could see you putting it up on your forehead if you're in a museum and you want to see the crown jewels, you know, through the glass or whatever. You can then pull it down over your face and then zoom in on the through the glass and look at something, you know, 2 or 3 feet away to see something like that. So I think, the other devices have somewhat of an advantage in being able to actually walk with a device on your head. It's not always recommended, though, because depending on the person and their balance and what they've learned and rehabilitation-wise, right. You know, we try to help people understand that there's always a limit to what you want to do. And so we also are big on training, helping people train with many, many tips on how to fully take advantage of this type of technology. So we do that here at the Chicago Lighthouse primarily. Luke and Eric on our technology team do a lot of evaluations with people. We don't charge for our time, so those who do come, live in Chicago area and want to come, they can do that. Some of these products will also appear on our website, which is lighthousetoolsforliving.com and lighthousetoolsforliving.com. Or if you have more questions, you can always call our 800 number, 800-919-3375.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned eSight, and I think you said before we came on air, there's a new generation of...
There is, launching on February 15th. For all of North America, eSightEyewear.com is the place that you can go and see the new launch of a brand new generation of the eSight. So we are pretty excited about it because we do have the new device, and it's very lightweight. It's kind of a nice, you can get it in sort of a light color or cream color, mm-hmm. rather than the big dark black one. It looks to me about half the size of the other one, so it's much smaller and it's much, much lighter. The eSight you can wear, and it sort of tilts up, so you can have your regular prescription glasses under the device, and you can wear it. Now, I had it on my head the other day for the first time for over an hour, and it was no big deal at all. It was very that light, you know, that lightweight. I felt like I could, you know, wear it for 2 or 3 hours with no problem. So that's mm-hmm. pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It does have, that particular product does have a wire down to a control panel that you can use to zoom in. And it has a really nice big wide screens, both wide from side to side and from top to bottom, which I think is important, especially when you're reading, to be able to see what's coming up as you go down the page. A lot of these devices have a skinny little thing and you can lose your place. And the biggest news of all was the old eSight was $14,995, mm-hmm. or should we say just an even $15,000. The new one is $9,995, so it's gone from $15,000 to $10,000. So you gotta see it, though, to believe it, and we're excited about having something, I would say, in all the features of the eSight, I would say have improved tremendously, and then to have the price come down, we're excited. So if you think you may be a candidate, you can, like I said, go to their website, eSightEyewear.com. That's E-S-I-G-H-T, eSightEyewear.com. And then call us, and we can do an evaluation. We don't charge for our time. We usually like people to spend at least an hour and 15 minutes, an hour and a half. We want to give the technology and the person time to really absorb it. This isn't something you just put on your head and just make a 10-minute decision. Right. It does take some work. Yeah. Yeah.
Walk around the block.
Yeah.
And, of course, I suppose you'll have this device and others at the upcoming roadshow.
We will. We will. We're starting in March 15th, so it seems like a long way off, but it seems I think it'll be right around the corner. So March 15th, we're going to be in the Frankfort Township office on Lincoln Highway in Frankfort, Illinois. And that's open to the public. It's free. It goes from 10 o'clock in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. So feel free to come and bring things that you'd like to, some of your personal items that you'd like to read and see. If you know someone with experiencing vision loss, we can sit and talk with you, show you many devices, from different kinds of sunglasses to different technologies, smartphones, computers, mm-hmm. reading machines, and some of these new headborne devices. We do that also as we go on to April 6th is one, and also April 11th. I know April 11th is in Merrillville, Indiana.
Right.
And April 6th is in Palos, right?
Right.
Yeah, Palos Hills Community Center. It's a great location for those of you in the south suburbs. And then those of you in northwest Indiana, this will be our third show. We did two shows there last year, and it was very successful. We had over 100 people that came to each show. So same again, 10 o'clock in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. If you don't know all these shows, and you do go to our website, chicagolighthouse.org, you can scroll down the page and to the dates in March and April, and you'll see them all listed there with the proper address. So mark your calendars.
He's Tom Persky, and I'm Brian Hawkins. This has been Tom's Corner here on The Beacon.
That's going to do it.
Another show in the can.
And our anniversary show.
Yeah, absolutely.
We argue whether it's 8 years or 9 years or whatever.
We had this argument last year. See, so it was 2009 because right. Reese was three. And now it's 2017, so that is eight years.
Yeah.
Eight years. Well, I still remember little Reese sitting in the corner with her, me just like desperately trying to get her to just sit and watch a DVD a DVD so I can control the, because I was running the board at that time.
Yeah.
I remember just trying to keep her and had one hand on her, one hand on the board. It was such a memory.
It was interesting. The show's gone through many interesting times.
So many changes.
Well, that's going to do it. We will be back next week, Wednesday night, on The Beacon here. I'm Bill Jurek.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
And we thank all of the staff that participated.
Yeah.
Sandra Murillo, Brian Hawkins, Tom Persky, and of course you.
Thank you,
listening.
Darling. And you as well.
Well, thank you very much.
You are the captain at the helm of this ship.
Well, you know, sometimes I got a dirty rudder.
No, it's all right. It's all right. Who doesn't?
We'll see you next week.